The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. Now a man was ill, Lazarus from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who had anointed the Lord with perfumed oil and dried his feet with her hair. It was her brother Lazarus who was ill. So the sisters sent word to Jesus saying, "Master, the one you love is ill." When Jesus heard this, he said, "This illness is not to end in death, but it is for the glory of God, and that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that he was ill, he remained for 2 days in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just trying to stone you, and you want to go back there?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in a day? If one walks during the day, he does not stumble, because he sees the light of this world. But if one walks at night, he stumbles, because the light is not in him." He said this, and then he told them, "Our friend Lazarus is asleep, but I am going to awaken him." So the disciples said to him, "Master, if he is asleep, he will be saved." But Jesus was talking about his death, while they thought he meant ordinary sleep. So then Jesus said to them clearly, "Lazarus has died, and I am glad for you that I was not there, that you may believe. Let us go to him." So Thomas, called Didymus, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us also go to die with him." When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, only about 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him, but Mary sat at home. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give to you." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise." Martha said to him, "I know he will rise in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus told her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, even if he dies, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I have come to believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, the one who is coming into this world." When she had said this, she went and called her sister Mary secretly, saying, "The teacher is here and is asking for you." As soon as she heard this, she rose quickly and went to him. For Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still where Martha had met him. So when the Jews who were with her in the house, comforting her, saw Mary get up quickly and go out, they followed her, presuming that she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come with her weeping, he became perturbed and deeply troubled and said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Sir, come and see." And Jesus wept. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not the one who opened the eyes of the blind man have something so that this man would not have died?" So Jesus, perturbed again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay across it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the dead man's sister, said to him, "Lord, by now there will be a stench. He has been dead for 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone, and Jesus raised his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you for hearing me. I know that you always hear me. But because of the crowd here, I have said this, that they may believe that you sent me." And when he had said this, he cried out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, tied hand and foot with burial bands, and his face was wrapped in a cloth. So Jesus said to them, "Untie him and let him go." Now many of the Jews who had come to Mary and seen what he had done began to believe in him. The Gospel of the Lord. So I want to say, first of all, I should have announced earlier that this is the day that we celebrate the third scrutiny for all those who are in our RCIA program preparing for baptism as catechumens. And so on the masses where we celebrate scrutinies, we always use cycle A. So if you had read cycle B, that's okay. But cycle A is the one that we're working with today. The first one, of course, for the third Sunday of Lent and the first scrutiny, was the story of the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman at the well, where Jesus, she comes to faith and Jesus says, "I am the life-giving water." Last week we had the story of the man born blind who comes to faith in Jesus and Jesus says, "I am the light of the world." And today we have the third scrutiny in the story of the death of Lazarus, when, of course, Mary and Martha already had faith in Christ, but all those around Jesus came to faith because of this miracle of bringing Lazarus back to life when Jesus says, "I am the resurrection and the life." These are the three principal mysteries that we celebrate on these three Sundays of Lent. Today, Ezekiel who starts this in the first reading today. He tells the people, "You have life through his spirit living in you." The life that you have is the spirit of God living in you. And I ask that question, are people even aware of this mystery? Because this is foundational. It was kind of a landmark week in my career, if you want to call it a career as an ecumenist, priest. Being a priest isn't really a career, it's a vocation, but as a priest, I've been serving the work of Christian unity and interreligious dialogue now for 22 years. And this past week, I had my meeting with the Bishops' Committee, with the U.S. United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, the Bishops' Committee on Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs, and it's my last meeting with them, because I've totally used up every last term that I can possibly have. There will be an election in June, and then there will be a new president finally. It almost feels like retirement, sort of, in a weird way. But I was talking with the chair of the committee. His name is Bishop Bambera. He's the bishop of Scranton, Pennsylvania. And he was talking about how, in many ways, people think that the work of Christian unity has gone about as far as it can. And we've fallen into this kind of comfortable rhythm of saying, well, people who leave the church and go to another church, they're doing so just because of selfish reasons. We're blaming them and stereotyping them as people who are looking for more entertainment, or they pursue this gospel of prosperity because we still believe there's bad news included in the good news, right? It's not just all good news. Kind of a light theology, or even a place that says, well, it's really okay not to believe in God at all and still come to our church. I mean, if you don't believe in God, you're welcome, of course, but our message always has to be about God. But he was quoting to me a document from St. Pope John Paul II, which I didn't get the name of it. I can still look this up. But he said John Paul II says that it's too easy for us to blame everybody else, that ultimately it has been our fault that so many Catholics leave the Catholic Church and go somewhere else. And he said this is why. He said we've skipped the kerygma. Now, what is the kerygma? Kerygma is a Greek word which means that proclamation of salvation, that the Son of God became one of us so that we could be saved through the blood of his cross and his resurrection so that we might be with him forever in heaven. That kerygma is something that all Protestant churches focus on completely. This is the whole point. You have to have that personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Have you had it? Have you discovered it? Have you claimed him as your personal Lord and Savior? See, for Catholic ears, that sounds kind of Protestant. And John Paul II says that what we've done is we've skipped the kerygma entirely and we've gone straight to didache. For you who are preparing to be Catholics at the Easter Vigil, didache, you should know this if we didn't teach it to you, didache was the ancient catechism that would be taught to those who are received into the church. You didn't take the classes and then come into the church. In the old days, and I'm talking about like year 50, what you did was you had the desire to receive the sacraments, and then afterwards you found out what that meant. We're so contractual. So he said we've skipped the kerygma entirely and we've gone to the didache, which is all the rules and regulations, all the things you shall do and shall not do. It's a very legalistic kind of approach. And he said, John Paul II says that didache makes no sense if you don't already have kerygma. We must be founded in the message of Jesus' salvation in order for everything else to make sense. And so therefore we should be spending our life only in thanksgiving, this kind of intimate relationship that God has called you to have with him. The beauty of the gospel and its intimacy can literally break our hearts because it is so deeper and so farther beyond what we could even imagine. So we go to the gospel story today. The reality is Jesus is truly in danger. They're not just acting like it. He's really in danger. And he is really in mourning. This was his best friend Lazarus. So we can see in him our own uncertainties, our suffering, our sadness. You can look at him now and recognize his true humanity as you identify yourself in him now. And you will identify yourself again when you look upon his body on the cross in less than 2 weeks and realize that that is your body too. If we have done our homework, we will also be able to look at him after he has risen from the dead and know with confidence that his glorified body is also our own. Today, Jesus gives us his promise of life that gets us through the hardest of times. Now we go to Martha and Mary. I love the line where it says Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So, you know, I don't know, Martha kind of gets the bad rap all the time. Mary's the one that seems to be closest to Jesus. And St. John says Jesus loved Martha and her sister. So Martha finally got a little attention here, representation. But he stayed away for 2 days. And when they got there, and it was only 2 miles away, when they got there, he was already 4 days in the tomb. Jesus knew about all of this from the start. So he says to the disciples, I'm going to awaken him, despite the danger that they remind him of again. He gets there, Martha's confession of faith, I know he will rise on the last judgment, on the last day. I have come to believe, she says, that you are the Christ. They have faith already in his ability to give life. I'm not sure if the stories about Jairus's daughter, which are in the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, or the widow of Nain's son, remember these are all people that Jesus brought back to life already in the Gospel of Luke, these stories were known, surely. So they must have been saying, dare we ask for this favor for someone who is so dear to Jesus that we ask him to bring Lazarus back to life. Despite fear and sorrow for his friend's loss, Jesus is compelled to do something. He gives life. Mary falls at his feet where she has been before. That whole contrast between the contemplative and the active life of faith between Mary and Martha. And then Jesus weeps. And the people say, see how he loved him. But some also say, well, he did it for others. Why couldn't he have done it for his friend? A kind of snarkiness, right? Well, what did that feel like for Lazarus? Do you think he was reluctant to come back to what was about to happen? Have you ever thought about this? Like, why go through death twice, right? Was that really a good favor? Well, the souls of the just had not yet been released into heaven because Jesus had not yet died on the cross. So it wasn't like he was already in heaven. He was in that kind of waiting room that they called limbo back in the old days. So it wasn't like Jesus pulled him back from joy, the joy of heaven. In this case, Lazarus is a type or a figure of Jesus' own story. But like any analogy, it's not complete. Remember, Lazarus would have to die all over again, probably easier the second time. But what I'd like you to reflect on is how Jesus gave Lazarus this amazing gift. He brought him back to life so that he could witness for himself the act of salvation, the kerygma. He saw Jesus suffer and die and rise, which is not something everybody got to see. Lazarus was also a lightning rod. You raise somebody from the dead, you would think that would be the last straw for many of the people who are trying to kill Jesus. Clearly, the leaders of the people were already trying to trap him. So now let us place ourselves in their family. Like the girls say, "If you had been here, Lord, this would never have happened." Many times people say this when I meet with families after someone has died. Where were you, Lord? Well, I want to say that complaint to God can be a sign of great faith. It's a sign of connection and engagement, even familiarity. They were all broken with grief, but this grief too can be a doorway for faith and hope to grow. So now we come to the mystery of the Triduum, which is in Holy Week, just the week after next. Jesus' life-giving work has come to the point of no turning back. Jesus has committed to his passion and death by this final miracle that causes the people to gather and march with him from the home of Lazarus in Bethany across the Mount of Olives into the city of Jerusalem with olive branches and palms that they gather along the way. This last miracle forces the people of his time and ours to finally decide whether or not Jesus is the resurrection and the life, as he says. So we must be all in with him in his hour of need. If he is not the resurrection and the life, life doesn't matter anyway. There are six among us who have prepared since last summer to be brought into the life of the church by the water of baptism, our catechumens. We have many more already baptized who will make a profession of faith in the church and receive the other sacraments of initiation, confirmation, and Eucharist. I ask if our six catechumens can now please come forward, and if possible, with their sponsors. I call forward Adam Dallas II, Jordy Madrid, David Nickham, Nancy Parma, who had something come up and she can't be here, Emma Reed, and Alex Wong.